Big show for you here today. Week 17 Sunday recap show. Whew, baby, we got a lot to talk about in what is maybe the longest week in NFL history here. Fantasy championships decided by a ton of big time matchups. I start off with a Sunday night solo recap about the Falcons and the Commanders and a check-in on both of those rookie quarterbacks. Then Andy Behrens joins me to recap the rest of the Sunday and Saturday slate. Why the Vikings aren't just making a quarterback-proof offense, they're actually growing and developing Sam Darnold. Does the Packers' lack of a number one wide receiver put a ceiling on their offense? And what did we make of the Bo Nix, Joe Burrow absolute fire fest on Saturday? All that and more coming up in today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, December 30th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is hell of a day to talk ball. Week 17 is in the books, and what a wild, long, and strange week 17 it was. But we have a ton of great performances to talk through, a ton of odd performances to talk through as well. Andy is going to join me later in the show to recap everything that we saw on both Sunday and Saturday. But as you all know, we started off here, as we always do, with a little solo recap of Sunday Night Football. And we have what turned out to be a fantastic game to talk through here. Commanders 30, Falcons 24. This game went into overtime, and it had a lot to break down here. Let's start on the Commanders side. We start with the winner. We start with the thing that we care about here. And look, I know that sometimes the whole culture changer can be a little bit of an overused trope in sports. Not in this situation. Because what we care about here is that Jaden Daniels is everything for this Washington franchise. Week 17 turned out to be just another chapter in what is a lengthy story of how Jaden Daniels has just, like I said, simply changed everything for this Washington Commanders franchise. You guys know I was born in the Northern Virginia area. I grew up with a lot of Washington fans as friends, family members, etc. This team has been so dead for so long. The last time I think you could really say any excitement about this team was the last time we saw a number two overall pick quarterback, taking them to the playoffs in his rookie year. That was the Robert Griffin III season. There are a lot of parts of this Jaden Daniels story that feels similar, but not all the way the same. And I think really what it is for me is that Jaden Daniels, no disrespect to RG3's great rookie season, I think Jaden Daniels checks so many more boxes that we look for in a franchise quarterback, in like a true guy. Like, forget the system. You know, I think that Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, all those guys, the legendary coaching staff that they put together there in Washington, or what turned out to be a legendary coaching staff in Washington that year in 2012. That was a great system that they ran there. It was catered to RG3's talents, all that stuff. There's no system in Washington right now. Like, Cliff Kingsbury's doing a great job as the play caller. I have already publicly taken the L on my Cliff Kingsbury skepticism, but there's not like this is what we have, a quarterback fitting into it. No. The system is Jaden Daniels, okay? Like, he is the system. And let's go through just a couple of reasons I thought that really stood out in this game. You know, number one, I think if you're a great quarterback, you go to your second and third pitches successfully when teams take away your number one thing. And the number one thing for this Washington offense this year has been the truly special connection between Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin. Coming into this game, coming into week 17, Jaden Daniels had a 140.0 passer rating when throwing to Terry McLaurin this season, which was the highest among any quarterback receiver duo in a single season since Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski in 2012 at 140.1 among players that had 75 targets between them. That's the company that Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin were keeping. Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. Rob Gronkowski, maybe best tight end of all time. That's what these guys were doing, right? Coming into this week. Number one, shout out to all of us Terry McLaurin bros. This is finally the moment where we really got that elite season from Terry that if you watched him play, if you watched the film, if you look at the RP numbers, you knew he was capable of. But that didn't show up tonight, right? The Falcons, who don't have a good defense, you know, they've made some plays overall. I think they made some plays in this game. But they don't have a good defense, but they do have a good number one corner. AJ Terrell, per Next Gen Stats, shadowed Terry McLaurin 94.1%. of his routes in this game, 32 of 34 routes. He also used a lot of press man coverage, especially on critical down and distances. 7 targets, 1 catch for McLaurin, banged in your fantasy football championship if you started him. So they took away that first pitch, and instead, we saw Jaden Daniels, even from the get-go, early on in this game, go to Olamide Zaccheaus, Zach Ertz on over-the-middle-of-the-field targets to great success. By the way, if you go back to Jaden Daniels' scouting reports, you're going to see a lot of negative notes about his work over the middle of the field. He has gotten so much better activating that area over the course of the season. And by the way, we're talking about, no disrespect to these players, we're talking about a role player wide receiver in Olamide Zaccheaus and Zach Ertz deep into his NFL career. We're focused on this moment right now. I can't wait to see what this offense looks like when they get some more guys, you know, some real difference makers in this receiver core beyond just Terry McLaurin. But again, they take that away. He goes to the over the middle of the passing attack. When those passing lanes closed, and there were some times where I think Atlanta defended this pass concepts of this offense pretty well, it just didn't matter because Jaden Daniels breaks all your rules. You close down the lanes of the passing game, he is going to open them wide open in the run game. 81.3% rushing success rate in this game is the highest in any game this season. We have had some unbelievable rushing performances. We've got like Josh Allen in the league. We've got Lamar Jackson in the league. We have great performances from running quarterbacks who are going to break the rushing success rate models more so than your running backs just because of the type of runs that they're going to take off with. Scrambles more valuable than design runs, etc. There are a lot of great runners in the league, and Jaden Daniels, best rushing success rate in a game this season, in the biggest game of Washington's season, which clinches a playoff berth for them. Like I said, there's no system in Washington. There's just a Jaden Daniels. It's just unbelievable what he's done this year. It's so cool to see. And this looks like, again, a team I want to be invested in. I want to have Jaden Daniels in Dynasty. I wish I had more Jaden Daniels in Dynasty. I took Caleb Williams number one overall in the reception perception rookie draft, Superflex rookie draft. Hate it. Shoot, even if Caleb Williams ends up being good, I wish I had Jaden Daniels. I'm trying to mold their two names together because I wish I'd taken Jaden Daniels. Terrible. Anyways, beyond my problems, I want to be invested in this Washington offense. If I'm a player out there that's a free agent pass catcher, whatever, I'm trying to find my way to Washington. I'm trying to play with this guy. I'm trying to play in this environment. I think it's going to be really good. I'm buying the stability of it. I don't think this is a one-year kind of flash in the pan type thing. This was supposed to be a total rebuild. I'm a jackass and thought that, you know, Dan Quinn could go one and done this year. Not going to go one and done. They're going to go to the damn playoffs. Make me look like an idiot. Jaden Daniels rules. What a great player. On the losing side of it, the thing we don't care about, the Atlanta Falcons. We don't really care about some Michael Penix misfires in this game. And let's be clear, there were some absolute misfires from Michael Penix in this game. Some throws that kind of left me, you know, scratching my head. Like, oh man, that is an ugly miss. And by the way, if you go back to his prospect profile, you're going to see some, hey, accuracy concerns. He can sail passes. That's part of it. That's going to be part of the Michael Penix developmental process. And some of those passes, you know, he definitely could have kept some drives moving. However, the reason I don't really care about that, two reasons. Starters here, you know, there were much more positive moments from Penix than I think than the negative misfires, anything like that. Particularly, let's remember, this is his first road start of his career. We are just now getting introduced to Michael Penix. And I would say this is the second straight game where we saw Penix access throws that just were not going to be available for this offense with Kirk Cousins under center, particularly in the second half. You know, we saw deep out routes to Drake London. Talked about that a lot this week, that was where Penix impressed me most in his first start against the Giants, accessing those deep out routes, throwing those, particularly to Drake London. Man, Drake London is so good. Shout out to the haters and losers who said Drake London could not separate as a prospect and early on in his career. 0% of those people watched the film, and you can ignore 100% of the people that said that, because that is an embarrassing take. Watch Drake London run some of those routes against the Commander secondary in this game and tell me that he cannot separate. Unbelievable bad analysis there on Drake London. Just stereotyping big wide receivers. Tough scene for those people. He was cutting up the secondary on those routes, and Penix was delivering the ball. That's what we want to see. I can't wait to see where this connection, regardless of what happens the next, you know, week, whether they make the playoffs, win the NFC South title, whatever. I'm excited to see where this connection develops in 2025 because, yeah, Kirk Cousins definitely helped Drake London grow and develop, I think, those middle of the field routes. But really where we're going to get like Drake London true superstar, you know, type season, it's going to be on those patterns right there. And Penix throwing them, I do think that matters a lot. And I would also add that the most important throw of the night came on Penix's touchdown. I tweeted about this, you know, saying that Kirk Cousins threw 83% of his passes, threw 83% of his interceptions on those against those exact coverage looks. If you get the reference, shout out to you. So obviously that's a fake stat. Don't fact check me. It's obviously a fake stat. But even if the post was kind of a jest, it does hold true a little bit here because that was a just rip in the middle of zone coverage to Kyle Pitts. And this Falcons team has struggled against zone coverage all year long. So that's just the type of throw that if Kirk is making it, that ball's dying. It's getting picked off, whatever. Penix shows the zip and the arm talent to get that in there. That matters more to me than a few misfires. Seeing that positive matters more than the negative to me right now. And beyond the Penix stuff, I would say the other reason this doesn't matter is that you can't throw this loss at the feet of Michael Penix. As a matter of fact, I think you probably throw that more at the coaching staff for both painfully poor timeout usage by Raheem Morris on both sides of the half, each half at the end of both. And I would also say Zach Robinson abandoning what was an effective run game early in the second half was a mistake. Bijan was cutting people up in this game. He loses you a couple fantasy points, I think, on that Wildcat snap. That's tough. If that's going to make the difference in your fantasy championship matchup, that's brutal, because otherwise he was flawless in this game, especially when they got to some duo runs. Like, they got to some real gap scheme runs here for Bijan, where he is just such a difference maker. They've been great on outside zone concepts. Bijan's been great on outside zone. He's a great outside zone runner. But, man, when they go to duo, he can really rip you some explosive plays. They were doing a lot against Washington. Really impressive, and I don't think they should have gotten away from it. I think that would have helped keep the offense a little more on track and get away from some of the volatility in Penix's game right now. But bottom line is, everyone on this Falcons team needs more experience. It's a first-time head coach, first-time play caller, and it's a rookie quarterback who, again, we are just now seeing get game reps. So it's going to be disappointing, I think, if this team does let the NFC South title slip away in the closing moments of the season, because they beat the Bucs twice. You know, Penix, I do think he's brought some new life to this team. But ultimately, even if they do miss the playoffs this year, I think there could still be a really bright future for this still growing Falcons organization with a lot of young pieces into it. All right, so that's Sunday Night Football. That's our final Sunday Night Football solo recap of the season, Week 18. I'll explain it later on in the show. We'll get to the whole schedule for the pod and everything. But for now, let's waste no more time. Let's get to the rest of the show with Andy Behrens, where we break down the games that you should care the most about, the games you should sort of care about, and, of course, the games that could have been an email. Let's get into it. Joining me now is my good friend, my work proximity associate himself, Andy Behrens. Andy, don't know if you noticed this, but probably one of the highlights of the day was a duck got loose on the field in the Bucks Panthers game. And the fact that I'm introducing that as a highlight of Sunday kind of sums up what a mess this particular slate of games was.
The duck showed great elusiveness, I thought. I'm you know, we'll see what the higher level analytics have to say about the duck. But I thought the duck was plenty shifty. And I was impressed. I would like to see more duck based on that little snapshot. It was very impressive. I also couldn't stop thinking about the way that situation would have been handled in other stadiums. I thought they did a great job. I thought they did a wonderful job corralling the duck and dealing with the duck situation.
Yeah, no, totally. Because I mean, shout out to the Buccaneers stadium officials, like the folks on the sideline, because, you know, we criticize these offensive coordinators, you know, when they don't have a good protection plan, when a defensive coordinator is able to throw something at them that they're not expecting. I don't think they probably practiced the scenario this week where Duck is loose on the field. You wouldn't have noticed by the execution. Absolutely sublime stuff by the Tampa Bay officials there. But we're not going to do a full-scale breakdown on what happens when wildlife gets into specific NFL stadiums, although that might be more entertaining than some of the games that we have to talk about here, because unlike usual, where we just recap Sunday, because there was a full Saturday slate, three games there, and it just happened. You know, we can get away with not recapping when it's a couple games on Saturday, whatever, but three games on Saturday, we're going to loop those into our usual Sunday recap, where we recap the games that you care about, we really care about off the top, games that we sort of care about, and then the games that could have been an email. Andy, we only have three games that I think we really care about from this Saturday and Sunday Week 17 slate. Week 17, by the way, has lasted an absolute lifetime.
Yeah.
It's just like...
Not over.
And it is not over. There's obviously a game that, as we're recording, this is about to happen on Sunday Night Football that you've already heard me talk about off the top. I can't believe there's a whole nother damn game tomorrow. That, like, I have a lot of Jahmyr Gibbs. I got to really care about and be dialed into this game tomorrow. It feels like again, enough already, week 17. Let's move on. But we have to recap the games that happened the last couple of days here, starting with the game that just wrapped up. Vikings 27, Packers 25. Andy, for a minute there, it looked like the Packers were about to suffer a big loss. They do lose this game, but at least they gave some fight and made this thing look a little closer than it was for most of the proceedings.
Yeah, I guess I want to focus on the fact that it wasn't actually this close. I mean, credit to the Packers for tightening it up at the end. It was good, but like, also, if you're a Packers fan, I mean, maybe if you're a Packers fan, you're telling yourself a story about last year's postseason and what a great run it was and how promising it was. And like, I know that the Packers can beat a good team. Mm-hmm. They just haven't done it yet this year, right? Your bottom line is this is two losses to the Vikings, two losses to the Lions. They lost to Philly. That was a close game. Guys got banged up, whatever. We don't really have a good win, you know? The best win on the season might be the Texans, the team that everybody in the AFC is angling to play in the postseason. So yeah. That's not great. Jordan Love certainly wasn't great in this one. Pretty ordinary performance, 185, and harassed a bit. I mean, obviously Minnesota's defense had a pretty good plan. The one thought that kept hitting me throughout this game was the Packers really look like a team that should maybe throw a bunch of money at T. Higgins.
I like your train of thought that you're pulling on there, because I had maybe not that exact thought, but sort of a thought along the same lines. And by the way, let's just be clear, the Packers will not be the team that throws a boatload of money at T. Higgins, because it's just not, it's just never how they operate. But that line of thinking, I was along the same lines here, Andy, because our colleague Nate Tice tweeted out that the Vikings defense were in man coverage, either cover one or two man, on every third and fourth down dropback in the first half against the Packers, according to Next Gen Stats. And this is not the first team that, like a good team that has treated the Packers offense this way. The Lions did it on Thursday night a few weeks ago. We've seen good defenses just be like, hey, we're going to man up on these receivers and like, let's see if they beat us. And I think the Packers receiver core, you know, we talked about it a lot in the offseason, is like, okay, who's going to become the guy here and like, who's the right player? Because it's a lot of good players to some degree. And I would say there are still a lot of good players to some degree in this receiver room, but I think Dobbs has taken a step forward to being like a really solid outside receiver, but I don't think any of the other guys have really taken a step forward. And I still maintain that, like, I mean, Jaden Reed coming out of this game with one catch for 6 yards when you're getting that much man coverage doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Even if it's not personnel, Andy, you think there's an argument that maybe, as much as Josh Jacobs has been wonderful for this team, that maybe they've gotten a little bit, I don't want to say too conservative on offense, but they've gotten into this weird world where they're just so run heavy. And then when they drop back to pass, I know Tom Brady's gotten a lot of crap lately for being kind of mid at his job. And I would say he's been pretty mid at his job. But he doesn't say anything that's like, whoa, so insightful. But sometimes I think he says things that are just accurate in he says it pretty plainly, which maybe that's what they're looking for at Fox. I have no idea. But he talked about, like, the Packers passing game lacks details. And I think that actually makes a lot of sense. They're very boom bust in the passing game. And it just, when they go against a good team like this, you really feel the bust aspect more than the boom.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because Brady repeated it a few times, pretty plainly too. And it's a damning comment, right? I think very highly of Matt LaFleur, and I'm really impressed by again, like, earlier in the season, what he did with Malik Willis was absolutely marvelous. But it's a pretty valid criticism, and it's not just, you know, it's not just the coaching, it's Jordan Love, it's everything. But he said it very matter-of-factly, and he said it a couple times, so it's not like something that we're misconstruing, and I don't think it's wrong. It's also like, if you build the whole thing out of Josh Jacobs for a few weeks, and you beat some bad teams, I guess it's tough to flip the switch and say, okay, now we're going to again be the kind of team that can win a 37-35 game against the Lions or the Vikings or whatever. And the Vikings didn't quite make you get that far in this one. But they also, like, the Vikings missed a couple makeable field goals, and this could have been, you know, this could have been like 33 points. This could have been a bigger margin. Should have been a bigger margin. If you're a Vikings fan, you're probably walking away from this game feeling like that wasn't our best effort, and it was still good enough to beat the Packers. And I also think the point about the Packers receiving core is very well taken. It's a bunch of good guys. They're good. But, you know, they, with Jaden Reed maybe not taking that step, Christian Watson he didn't play today, but Christian Watson not taking that sort of superstar level step that you thought maybe you could squint a little bit and see when he was a rookie, and you could see it with Reed a little bit as a rookie. If they don't level up, then we are lacking somebody who absolutely commands extreme attention, and you'd only have to look at the other side of this game to see a guy like that, right? Justin Jefferson just drawing, every time they showed the coverage downfield on Justin Jefferson, it's two guys, it's three guys converging on him, and that obviously made things so simple for Jordan Addison, who's way too talented to try to, you know, Addison scores that beautiful touchdown being guarded by, like, you know, single coverage from a safety. What are we doing? That's, you know, a lot of that is the Justin Jefferson effect, and Green Bay doesn't have somebody who tilts the field like that.
That's such a good point, how it's so easy to juxtapose these two teams together and kind of just, what's the benefit of having, Justin Jefferson is an elite receiver. You're probably not finding a Justin Jefferson out there. Those guys don't grow on trees. Those guys don't grow on, like, multiple trees. Those are really hard to find. But even just, like, having a verifiable number one that another team has to account for, that's a great example of it. And look, the Packers offense is still good. They're eighth in EPA per play. They're 15th in success rate, which, by the way, I actually think really is a good way of showing what this team is. They do create the big plays, but I think down to down, specifically in the passing game, there is some just hiccups to it. When you can feel comfortable just manning up on all these receivers and not having, not having like a guy that you're dedicated to, I do think you feel the lack of layups. I will just look, and I'm somebody that's a big fan of Jaden Reed. I think he's a good player, prospect I really like. Maybe he never becomes like a true number one or anything. I don't know what's up, and I know he's dropped some passes this year, but man, I would say that over the last two seasons, the time I felt the Packers passing game operated the smoothest was at the end of last year, when they were really just running the thing through Jaden Reed. I thought that brought out the best of Jordan Love, like from getting his best instinct, sort of like, okay, like, we don't have to go for the home run every single time. Like, we can take a double to this guy, and he can even turn that double into a triple on his own because he's so good after the catch. I do think that's missing from the Packers offense, but just not having a guy like Wicks not turning into like a true starter, Dobbs being a good solid starting outside receiver, but not somebody that really scares defenses, leaves plays on the field sometimes, I think that's been a problem for the Packers. But I'm glad you brought up the Vikings side of this here too, Andy, because Justin Jefferson, I'm sure people in their fantasy football championships are wanting more than 8 catches for 92 yards. Boo freaking who? There are bigger problems out there for people than just.
By the way, he had an all-time like negated catch, by penalty. I mean, this game actually featured a couple plays that were wild that got wiped out by flags.
Absolutely. But like when you see CJ Ham, you know, get loose on like plays in the flat, or, you know, your favorite player in the league, Cam Akers, get loose coming out of the backfield. There's a reason that these plays are just wide open, or TJ Hockenson in single coverage beating man on third or fourth down, things like that. There's a reason those plays happen. It's because number 18 is taking such attention on from the opposing defense. I thought this was a great Sam Darnold game. I know he had the one interception. He missed some plays here and there, but I think Brady might have touched on this too, but I would say that the difference in a coach like Kevin O'Connell versus some of the other like quarterback gurus out there and stuff is Sam Darnold really looks like a guy right now, Andy, that has been taught the position, not just put in we've made the offense quarterback proof, right? Like, oh, anybody can go behind center and play in our offense, whatever. Sam Darnold, you see him like go through progressions against complicated coverage and be like, nope, this is not it. This is not it. This look isn't it. Okay, there's my guy. That's really impressive for a guy in Sam Darnold, who the theme of Sam Darnold's career was the seeing ghost comments. And now he's confidently going through progressions. That is a big, it's a big, obviously, feather in the cap for Sam Darnold, but certainly for his coach as well.
Yeah, you could never watch this game film and say that this was just, you know, a victory for a system. He made some throws. He made some great throws. I will also say the protection was awesome. Only one sack, and he took a long time on a lot of throws too. Like, no, you know, disrespect to him, but he had a bunch of time. Protection was excellent, but man, he made some difficult, deep middle throws, layering it over coverage. He was very impressive. He also, the one interception he threw, which, you know, a very aggressive and maybe questionable decision, and he gets hit as he throws it and it gets picked. He came right back with degree of difficulty throws. Like, they didn't, you know, they didn't just give him some layups after that. It was difficult downfield throw after difficult downfield throw, and he stuck them. 377 yards. He was great. I mean, life is a little easier when you're throwing to Jefferson and Addison, and you've got this receiving core. Oh, shout out to Jalen Naylor too. He was great.
Yeah,
he caught, good point. I think it was the first touchdown for that team. He also, on the interception return by Green Bay, I think it was Naylor that actually stripped the ball from the defender. They didn't end up coming away with it, but just like good football guy stuff from Jalen Naylor all day. He's as a number three, that guy's very good.
You need some guys like that, right? When you have these superstar players, you need to have some dirty work players, some guys that just do some football guy stuff, like come up clutch when it matters, you know, and certainly the Vikings have that. They are such a good team. It feels right that they're fighting for the number one seed in week 18, regardless of what happens tomorrow with the Detroit Lions. That's exactly what you want to see. Feels like this team has earned that. It's a damn good football team that I certainly have to take the L on underrating this offseason. No question about it. I'm curious, Andy, Sam Darnold, I still think the plan for the Vikings is probably, thank you for your service, Sam. Good luck making a bajillion dollars somewhere next year, because there are certainly going to be teams in position to pay Sam Darnold a bajillion dollars in free agency, and we're going to turn the page to our round one rookie quarterback who we clearly like. I still think that's the plan, but Sam Darnold is fourth in the NFL with 35 touchdown passes. It is just going to be if they do it, I think now we'll have to say that's a pretty, you got to have some stones to make that move, right? To just say good luck bye to a guy who's been that productive and turned to the page. So I don't know. What's your best guess on what happens with Darnold now at this point?
I mean, they will know what they have in McCarthy. Obviously, they're the team that sees him every day. Nobody else does. Everything that he's doing is going to be outside of view. But what if the Vikings finish with a freaking 15 win regular season and a couple of playoff games? I mean, you can't just pat him on the back and be like, great year. Thanks for the deep January run. you just can't do that. You gotta
when's
bring
the last
him back
time that's happened? Like, I know they just did this with Kirk, but that was totally different situation.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, I mean, they're a Super Bowl contender. Like, where the Detroit's really banged up. There's not a, you know, Philly's great, but but not completely invulnerable. And the Vikings just simply look like a team that can give any team 35 or 38 points the same way the Lions can. So, man, we can't rule out the notion of Sam Darnold leading a team to the frickin' Super Bowl. I mean, you win a couple games coming off a 14, 15 win season, and then you win a couple games in the playoffs. He's got to come back. Like, I don't know. Are we just franchise tagging him? I guess that's what we're doing. But that guy has to be your quarterback going into the next season, unless they're just seeing superhero stuff from McCarthy.
Which is unlikely, because McCarthy's seen the inside of a operating room multiple times since they took him in the first round. So that seems unlikely. Yeah, I don't know. These teams that are counting on, hey, well, don't worry, we're just going to end up Sam Darnold next year. You might not. You might not. It'll be very fascinating to track. Any other last notes on this game, which obviously was one of the most important and impactful of the day?
Don't know if he's banged up or to what extent he's banged up, but we did not see a lot of Aaron Jones on the final, like, game clinching drive for the Vikings. And that was he would have been a natural fit for what they were, for what they were asking Cam Akers to do. So that was, it's a little bit of a concern moving forward. Hopefully he's fine.
Do you write a week 18 waiver wire, Andy?
Yes. I sigh because I don't like to really endorse week 18. It's wild. Some of the names that I already have in there are pretty wild. And, like, you know, people know the reasons why maybe they shouldn't settle their fantasy leagues in week 18. Like, the whole AFC is basically, you know, like the top four seeds are known, right? Like, we're like, those teams are going to sit a bunch of players. All the best players on the best teams are going to sit. So anyway, the names in there are wild. Yeah. And we may have to be talking about some Minnesota stragglers.
Brother, at least there are people in my mentions that are ready to start the discourse. We need to go back to week 16 fantasy championships after some of the way that week 17 went. So, I think we know why we probably shouldn't be playing in week 18 for fantasy championships. You don't want to be like do I got to start Xavier Worthy with Carson Wentz discussion? You don't want to be having that. You don't want to have to do that. And you can just not do that. The default settings, I believe, is you don't do that. Anyways, I was just asking because it only seems right, Andy, that you got to write about picking up Cam Akers one last time. Probably the sixth time on a second team.
Matt, he might be the best name in the whole column. We'll talk about Marvin Mims. He's fun. We'll talk about maybe Ray Davis. It's a bunch of sketchy names.
What a treat. All right. On that note, you mentioned Marvin Mims. The second game in the games that we really care about, perfect transition. The one game that you got to care about from Saturday was Bengals 30, Broncos 24. This game was ludicrous. I mean, obviously it went to overtime, several missed kicks. This thing could have gone either way in that overtime period. We got big numbers from both quarterbacks, specifically the winning quarterback, Joe Burrow, who threw three touchdown passes to T. Higgins, who I same thing with Darnold. A couple of, you know, months ago, I started thinking, I think it was like week four. I was like, this damn Bengals team can't be letting T. Higgins just walk out the door. Figure it out, boys. Certainly seems like Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are going to hold the Bengals' feet to the fire, and they should. Burrow should, because he's a leverage to do it, to keep T. Higgins around there. But anyways, this specific game, Andy, was absolutely wild.
Yeah, incredible game by Higgins. This is like one of the worst games that Ja'Marr Chase has had statistically in, like, I don't know, in like 2 months, 3 months. He still finishes with 102 yards and 9 catches. Just an unreal year from him. Burrow was incredible again. Over 400 yards. He now has, he's got a pretty good shot of finishing with 5,000, which, you know, passing numbers have been depressed all over the league. But Joe Burrow is probably going to finish certainly north of 4,900. Good shot that he finishes with 5,000 for the year. He's just been incredible. He's, you know, leading the league in passing scores and passing yards. I believe in completions and attempts. It's just a wild season from him. It is. I don't think it's wrong when people point out that, man, if this were an actual winning team, I don't think he'd be the MVP front runner, but you couldn't have the conversation without him. It's just been an outrageously good year. He's simply not giving the ball away either. He's been amazing. He had to lead like three game winning drives in this one game. It got so messed up. This thing was wild. I guess the other note on the Bengals side, Chase Brown comes away with a high ankle injury in this one. It was late. It was Chase Brown trying to do what was almost certainly the right thing, which was to give himself up at the goal line so they could just kill clock, kick a field goal, get out of there.
Oh, man.
But their failure to do it. Joe Burrow ended up with a rushing score to take the lead, and then Denver comes back, and people know what happened. You know, but their, you know, the decision not to do that was consequential, because it led to a lot more football being played, which was fun. Very sketchy tactical question. But anyway, we're probably going to get a bunch of Khalil Herbert next week. So he's maybe the marquee name in the week 18 waiver wire column. Who knows? Where it seems unlikely that Chase Brown, who was not moving around too well after that, is going to be able to go.
Which stinks, because he's been such a good player for them. And he was really good in that particular game too. Just handled massive workloads as Chase Brown. And, you know, depending on what they do in the backfield, I think he's going to be a very, very high pick next year. Although those day three backs that kind of come out of nowhere always kind of sketch me out a little bit. But this seems like a legit performance from Chase Brown. So hopefully he can get back.
I will say, for a day three back, he was awesome in college.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, I get stuff wrong all the time, and I'm not a total scout during the college season, but he never missed. In his final season at Illinois, he was 150 yards against everybody, and the best defenses on their schedule, like Michigan, Iowa, he crushed. He was great, and he was a full workload feature guy too.
Yeah. And that I think has been key, is that, yeah, he was kind of a space back for them, screens and things like that in year one, but he did have that workhorse history in college, and you've seen that come to fruition. So hopefully he can get back, if, like, you know, the many things. And I, by the way, I'm really not sure this Bengals team, I'm not going to say I'm not rooting for them to make the playoffs, but I'm really not sure that if they deserve to make the playoffs. Like,
I know.
You know, yeah, I want Burrow in the proceedings. Like, that'd be great. Chase, like, his triple crown season needs to mean something. I'd love it to really mean something. But they deserve to, this, the organization deserves to take an L for this defense. Like, that, it's so pathetic. It's so pathetic that it there has to be some consequence to that. But anyways, Burrow blitzed on a season high percentage of his dropbacks and according to next gen stats, and he got the ball out so fast. He was so efficient in this game. He's been just remarkable all year. Just fantastic stuff by him. You know, it's incredible. He really deserves a ton of credit for that. On the other side of it too, you know, there were some wonky Bo Nix moments, but there were some real fun Bo Nix moments as well, including Marvin Mims' deep touchdown, the 51-yarder. That was just just an electric throw from Nix, who has been aggressive pushing the ball down the field all year. I really am interested to see what this offense. They're still probably the favorite to make the postseason, because we're likely dealing with Carson Wentz versus the Broncos in Week 18, and I will be giving the edge to the Broncos defense. Even if Joe Burrow just rang them for 400 bills, I do think that they've got the edge over damn Carson Wentz. Regardless, they'll make the playoffs this year, but I'm really interested to see what this offense looks like in the future with Nix and maybe some more other, does Marvin Mims continue to take a step? Do they get like a real deal running back in here? I think they really got something there in Denver.
Yeah. 8 catches on 8 targets for Mims. And you mentioned like the 51 yarder. I knew he had that in his game. We've seen that occasionally for Marvin Mims before, right? Like, just beating everybody deep. The thing I don't think we've seen from Marvin Mims was him just mossing two guys in the end zone and winning a contested catch like he did on the second touchdown. That was badass. That was great. And it was, you know, give Bo Nix credit for the throw, but that was an unreal catch between two defenders. They couldn't really defend it much better than they did, and Mims just won. So that I thought was really impressive. It's obviously, it's far and away the best game that Mims has played as a pro. Nick's great. Like, I don't want to say anything too negative about Bo Nix, because it's a great story, and I know I've said it a million times, but where he was in September versus where he is now is really remarkable. He's been great. If you're just looking at this game for Bo Nix, the Bengals game, through the filter of a rookie quarterback performance, freaking awesome. The 3 touchdowns, you know, his best moments were incredible. When he, you know, when he takes off and runs, he's great. And it's always a good decision. Really impressive. If you're like, if you're a Denver fan and you're starting to think about, okay, what does the postseason look like for us if we get by Kansas City? And is this guy going to lead me on a January run? It's a little more problematic because I do think he missed some stuff. And I thought there were a couple of, wide ass open, sideline deeper shots that he had. One of them was to Sutton. The other one might have been to Mims, might have been to Vele.
Yeah. Could have been like pass interference, that one down the sideline that, yeah. I mean, if he hits Mims, he's walking into the end zone most likely.
And they just missed, and they needed to be, I don't know, they needed to be a lot closer. There were a couple of those, and the interception just had no hope. But overall, like, whatever, he's a rookie quarterback. Yeah. And if we're just looking at it that way, and we're looking at the best moments from Bo Nix, and we can forgive a couple of misses, incredible game on a huge stage.
No question. And yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of the right way to view this. Broncos fans have been very, very protective of Bo Nix this year.
Yeah. I would be too. I'd love this Bo Nix season if I were a Broncos fan. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just worth wondering. Yeah. Once they get into the playoff mix, if they do, cause they got to finish the job here. What does that look like against some of these better teams and things like that? But again, I am very enthusiastic to see what this team builds. Mims only plays on 46.7% of the snaps in this game. I wonder if he continues to earn more of a full-time role, because I've been clear about this. His route running was a mess as a rookie. But seeing him make some of those plays in tight coverage, that is a new development beyond just some of the gadget ways they've tried to get him the ball. Yeah. But this does feel very Sean Payton-y, where they have like one X receiver in Cortland Sutton where we feed the ball a ton, and then we've kind of got guys like all around him in his orbit. So maybe that doesn't change for Marvin Mims going forward. But he was a guy that I was wondering, like, if he had an NFL future after year one. The Broncos have done a good job in getting him like specific looks that work for him.
Yeah, they also, like, I know it was one big game where he really kind of erupted, but his workload has gone up steadily throughout the season, right? And in like the last month and a half or so, they are finding a bunch of creative. They're doing really fun stuff with him out of the backfield. Like, they're giving him more opportunities than he saw earlier in the year, and certainly the year prior.
Last game that we really care about here, and we do have to really care about this game, because Giants 45, Colts 33. Andy, I think this Colts loss, I think it's the most embarrassing of the season.
Yes.
I think it is the most embarrassing loss of the season, because Colts, you win this game, you're still alive in the playoff mix, despite the just weird ass season that you have endured. You got to start your backup quarterback. I get it. Your backup quarterback was not perfect. He was Joe Flacco. He's exactly kind of what you'd expect from Joe Flacco. He brought a little more production to the passing game. He did give some throws to New York, no question, but ultimately you score 33 points. That defensive performance, Andy, was putrid. And like, that's the only word I can think to describe it.
It was horrendous. And it's, I'm almost emotional about it, because like, I needed something from Indianapolis other than like a -4 for fantasy purposes. So that's outrageous. But it was also just like, they were like two steps slow all the time.
Yeah.
It was as if, I don't know, was Malik Nabers in the scouting report? Like, did you know what you were up against in Malik Nabers? Was anybody made aware? So just from a, like, what could the game plan possibly have been to, the way they were just, they spent the whole game reacting instead of initiating anything. It was just an absolutely horrific defensive performance. 45 points to the Giants. Drew Lock wasn't sacked. Drew Lock, who threw two pick sixes the week before, and was dealing with injury. Four touchdown passes, no interceptions, no sacks. He runs for a touchdown on a scramble where he was just clowning every defender on the field. They all took bad angles. They all fell down. This is just Drew Lock. This isn't like, that wasn't Lamar Jackson out there.
I called the Giants like barely an NFL team 20 times like in the last week. And I don't even feel like, oh man, I need to come in here and issue a statement of apology to Drew Lock and the Giants. I don't feel any need to do that. I feel need to slam the Colts for allowing this to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Giants were literally the worst team in the league. And, you know, they were in pole position for the number one pick in a draft where maybe the number one pick doesn't mean everything. But my God, this is the friggin' Giants. The Giants have been a punchline all year. And for the Colts, you know, who still had a potential playoff future entering this day, to allow 45 to the Giants is just absolutely unbelievable. And it's the kind of thing that gets whole coaching staffs fired.
11 of 13 for 204 yards and two touchdowns when not pressured. Perfect passer rating for Drew Lock when not
Drew Lock
when, Drew Lock when not pressured. And by the way, I mean, that's 13 pass attempts according to Next Gen. He had 23 in the game. So there's 10 more where you got pressure on him, and there's not a lot of bad throws you can put over here. Like, the coverage plan was, I have no idea. Obviously, you got to watch back the film and the whole deal, but we just talked about a team up at the top and Justin Jefferson, where so much attention goes to the number one and how that opens things up for the other players. There was no extra attention. I'm guessing there's not a lot of extra attention to Malik Nabers in this game. And that makes it even more embarrassing than, like, Wandale Robinson is dunking on you on corner routes in this game. You know, Darius Slayton gets three for a 32-yard banger in your defense. You know, Tyron Tracy's running free on some leak routes out of the backfield. What in the world? I mean, Gus Bradley has been, and it's been kind of just like, okay, I guess Gus Bradley's just your defensive coordinator for the Colts. I'm like, well, he's trying some new stuff. Sure, maybe this seems like there will be changes. And this is the type of loss where I think there will be changes as a result of this. We talked about it in the previous show. I thought, like, maybe, okay, we just got to run this thing back with Steichen and you know, Chris Ballard as GM and, like, keep building, give Anthony Richardson, like, a third year. You know, Richardson doesn't play this game. I think Richardson will probably still be the starting quarterback for this team next year, if I had to guess. I think there's going to be some big changes as a result of this game, and probably deserve.
Yeah, you can't go out this way. The Giants averaged 7.3 yards per play. The Giants. I mean, it's just wild. It is absolutely wild. That is just total non-resistance. An incredible no-show by the Colts defense. Again, in an absolute must-win situation against the actual worst team in the league, and one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the league. They turned Drew Lock into, like, what is he, like, the number two, number three fantasy scorer of the week at the position. Like, that's just wild. Just absolutely wild. And you kind of put up numbers eventually.
Right.
They got to 33 points. You know, Taylor with a couple more touchdowns. They needed him to, you know, the funky play that they ran on the 2-point conversion that he dropped. They really needed him to convert that in the moment. You got probably Joe Flacco at this stage of his career. This is probably close to, like, a 99th percentile game from him, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you weren't, based on what we saw earlier in the season, you weren't going to get anything better than this from Joe Flacco. So you probably got the offensive effort that you needed. It's just an absolute dereliction of duty on the part of every member of that defense.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about the Colts. Like, great, you got Alec Pierce over 100 yards. He also had some pretty rough mistakes in this game. Awesome, not really awesome game for Michael Pittman. I will say he had some big time catches. That was nice to see, because he just has been too absent this year. Like, that's been a problem. And yeah, I mean, the Jonathan Taylor mistake on the 2-point conversion, it's just tough in two of the last three games that you can point to, like, a potentially game changing mistake by one of your best players, which, again, I can't remember who called this game, but they made the point late in it that, you know, this is the type of loss where you got to think about, like, I think it might have been Jonathan Vilma that called this game, where he's like, this is the type of loss where you don't think about, like, schematically, what do we do, blah, 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 any of this. Like, we think about, like, what type of building we are and, like, what type of culture we are after this game. And I think that is absolutely true. Last thing on this game, before we toss the break, I just got to say, like, there is no bigger wasted emotion in sports discourse than, oh my God, like, how could they lose or how could they win this game and hurt their draft positioning?
I
totally understand where fans and, like, even unbiased observers come from in this regard, but I think it is the stupidest thing that we do on the outside, because even if it is theoretically dumb to go down in the draft order by winning, quote, meaningless games and all of that stuff. Even though the course of NFL history would show you it does not matter where you, how high you take the guy. All that matters is what you do and develop the guy once he gets in the building. Look at Sam freaking Darnold, who we talked about at the top of the show. Okay? Like, that's what matters. Doesn't matter. Like, picking a guy one, two, three, four, that does not guarantee success. The most recent time we banged on a team for doing this was the Houston Texans, who took CJ Stroud second overall, who I know that the Texans have not had the season they wanted, but they're going to the playoffs in back-to-back years, and that guy has thoroughly outplayed the guy that was taken ahead of him in Bryce Young. So even that aside, shit doesn't matter, man. Like, the players and the coaches will never do it. Will never, ever, ever, ever do it. Will never, ever care. So just stop caring about it. It's never gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah. And you're so right. And your final point there is just so spot on. Like, the actual players on the field are not tanking. Like, they're not tanking. I don't know. I guess you can control it from above by through personnel decisions and who you allow on the field and don't. But like, everybody involved in the game, everybody who's like on the sideline and on the field in any given day is absolutely trying to win. So they didn't screw up. And I think Dable after this game even said when asked about like the draft order, I think he just gave like a, well, that's somebody else's problem, but
yeah,
not
he said,
mine.
That's Joe's problem.
That's Joe's problem.
The GM, Joe Shane. Yeah, no. And like, that's the thing. Even if you could, I don't know, get like a notarized letter from the owner that I, Brian Dable, have authority to lose this game and I won't be fired for, I don't like, you would probably need to guarantee me job security for like 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
You're never going to get even if you somehow could get like, hey, Malik Nabers, drop a few balls so that we can pair you with some rookie quarterback next year, which is, again, never going to happen. You're not even going to get down to like the fifth player on the roster before, especially on a bad team like this, where you could get guys to start throwing games. So it's just a stupid waste of emotion. I wish we wouldn't talk about this stuff. Like, it's just dumb, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I get focusing on it as a fan. You just can't, like, you know, you can't direct your ire toward the players.
Yeah, you can't criticize the players and coaches for it. I get, like I said, I totally understand why it's annoying and all that. Like, you're fully in the coping corner if you're a Giants fan and like this is all you have to positively root for. You probably don't care that Drew Lock's having the best afternoon of his life or whatever. But I mean, again, I think it's better to go into the off season, like if you're a guy like Malik Nabers, not hating your life. Okay. So let him get 171 yards and two touchdowns. There's at least some silver lining in that. And again, you're not going to be picking first overall in this crappy quarterback class. Oh no, what are we going to do now? You'll just sign. Like, I joked on Twitter, Malik Nabers is dominating the Colts so that he can get Jameis in the building next year and go for 2,000 yards on like 250 targets. So you can look, have that.
Oh, hell yeah.
To. Yeah, that's something to look forward to. All right, let's toss the break. We come back. We're going to run through, to be honest, a very ugly rest of the week 17 slate right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through the games that we sort of care about. And we've only got three games that we sort of care about because of some of the mess that we have in the email section here. Let's start with Rams 13, Cardinals 9. Cardinals, disgusting. Disgusting effort. Disgusting loss. It was really, really gross. I do want to actually talk about the Rams here, Andy, for a little bit because I as I was watching this game, your words from the previous show were really ringing through my head about how we just haven't really seen like a clean offensive performance from this Rams team. And I would say that this was not a clean offensive performance. You know, at various times during the season, Andy, I've half jokingly, you know, said about certain teams and certain offenses, like, it bothers me when you have one receiver getting targeted more than your team is scoring points, and like, especially when that player is not like an elite player. And by the way, Puka Nacua, I do think, has graduated into tier one of the NFL receivers, so I'm not saying throwing the ball to Puka Nacua 14 times is a bad thing, but when you're scoring 13 points and basically nobody else is giving you anything in the passing game, I'm a little troubled by that.
Yeah, because I mean, you're going to face teams in the playoffs where, I mean, they're probably going to face one team in the playoffs if we're being realistic here. But like, you can't, I mean, Matthew Stafford passes for 189 yards, and one guy had 129 of them, caught 10 balls of the 17 completions. I mean, that's just, you know, Puka's awesome. He was great in this game, no question about it. And, you know, they had a, they took some shots elsewhere and none of them hit, basically. But that's rough. 13 points. This is three straight games. The crazy thing for the Rams is that, like, this streak of three straight games in which Stafford has not cleared 200 passing yards, it follows that Bills game where they put up 40 plus and they beat, you know, an actual Super Bowl contender with the MVP front runner. I mean, that's just crazy. But 13 points against the Cardinals does not. We're not scaring anybody. The Rams still have a negative point differential for the year. They might, after, you know, we'll see after Monday night, they might still have the worst point differential in the division. And yet they have 10 wins. So they're going to keep playing, but they're not going to be around for long if they aren't like at least a two dimensional offense.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Puka Nacua has a 47.1% share of the first read targets according to fantasy points data. That's obviously absurd. But, you know, Stafford had a 2.97 time to throw against the Cardinals, which is, I believe, one of his longest marks of the season. And it felt that way, that he was just like looking for something to come open. And if it's not Puka, like, we're in a rough stretch for Cooper Kupp, who was the poster child of this whole, yo, you can't be throwing a Cooper Kupp like 20 plus times and scoring fewer than 20 points. I said that all the way back in week one after he had that game. And because that's where Cooper Kupp is at this point in his career. And I think it's gotten worse over the course of the season. I'm pretty worried about what we're getting out of Cooper Kupp at this point. And just the rest of the Rams receiving talent, like, these are not high impact players. I do think that's a problem for the Rams as they head into the postseason. On the other side of it, Trey McBride gets his first receiving touchdown.
It's a little late for me. A little late for
fantasy. Also, like, the guy is he scored a rushing touchdown earlier in the season. So this whole thing is a little bit like eye rolling anyways. Like, again, congratulations. Your offense is still really, really bad. We got a couple of nice moments from Marvin Harrison Jr. I think this might have been one of his better games in a while. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I thought at times, like, okay, we're just going to run this back in Arizona next year. They're another team that I think could see, not Jonathan Gannon, not GM, but like maybe a new offensive coordinator might be in line here for Arizona.
Yeah, I guess so. That's probably right. What a, like, this is just the end to a, I don't even know how to phrase it with Kyler Murray, because he's had some really nice moments. The mobility is back. His best moments are really exciting. But this is a multi-year NFL veteran now, and it just didn't, I don't know. They're not putting together drive after drive after drive that make you think at any point in the next couple seasons the Cardinals are going to be like a real challenger in the, I mean, shit, just look at the rest of the NFC. I mean, the Vikings are miles ahead. The Lions are miles ahead of you. They're not close to that. Like, you know, the best teams in the NFC right now, every drive looks good. And the Cardinals are a team where, like, I don't know, two drives a game look pretty good, and one of them ends in a field goal.
Great way of saying it. And I also think that, you know, Harrison definitely has some work to do after his rookie season, but even at his best, I'm really not sure stylistically he's that great of a fit with Kyler Murray, which, like, I get it. People can be like, oh, you're just making excuses for Marvin Harrison, whatever. Like, look at what Malik Nabers has done with bad quarterback play. Look at what Brian Thomas Jr. has done with bad quarterback play. It is just as bad for a receiver if you've got holes in your game and those, like, or you have strengths in your game and those don't overlap with your current quarterback. That is just as bad as being like playing with an outright bad quarterback who's just going to force you the ball and like design touches and stuff, which Harrison's not going to get. So a little troubling overall in Arizona there.
I will also just remind people that I know I've said this a few times on the pod that, like, we used to have a rule about like third year receiver breakouts. Oh, yeah. And you can also just look back to, like, you know, we all had jokes about Davante Adams when he was a rookie, right? And he, like, that guy had a multi-year stretch as just about the best receiver in the league. So everybody's on a different timeline, and you don't have to have a scorching hot take about exactly how good all of these individual receivers are going to be for the rest of their career based on, you know, what happened in the first 17 weeks of their rookie seasons.
Could not agree more with that. Next game up here, Buccaneers 48, Panthers 14. I mean, the Panthers, as soon as they don't have Chuba Hubbard, like, they're banged in this game. But
yeah,
a lot of, like, basically anything you wanted in fantasy, you got in this game, which is great. But it certainly was a needed win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after what happened last week.
I hope that not too many people pivoted away from players in this game. Like, I doubt that you did with guys like Irving and Mike Evans, but you know, there were all these weather concerns about this game coming into it. And I'm not usually somebody who reacts to weather unless I like actually see a monsoon at kickoff or just before kickoff. So didn't really affect me, but man, this version of Tampa Bay is incredible, and you'd be terrified to play them if you were, I don't know, I wouldn't want to see him if I were like the Lions right now, because the Lions can't really stop anybody. And this Bucs offense is good. Now, granted, like, you know, you get Baker Mayfield against a good team and a team that can invite him to make a couple of risky throws and take the ball away, like, that'll happen. You know, Baker Mayfield is certainly not a perfect quarterback, but my God, 5 touchdown passes in this one, over 350 yards, got whatever he wanted with Mike Evans. Jalen McMillan scored 2 more touchdowns. I think that's 6 in 4 games for McMillan now. McMillan just specializes in like walk-in touchdowns too, where there's nobody else around him. And I feel like that's, you know, we can put a lot of that on the Panthers. Obviously they're facing one of the worst defenses in the league. I get it. But man, this version of the Bucs in the playoffs could be really scary. This team though also has probably the widest range of outcomes, of any team in the league.
Yeah. I could see them winning a playoff game, and obviously they could not make the playoffs. As we are recording this right now, we don't know what happened Sunday Night Football, but they need help. They don't control their own destiny because they blew that game against the Cowboys last week that I'm still not over. I'm also still not over being super impressed by Liam Cohen, and I don't know what they're going to do, but they can't let that guy out of the building, period. I think we know that the biggest difference maker in sports, in this sport in particular, is having a franchise quarterback. Number two might be having one of the guys as your offensive play caller. Yeah. And I've been ready to say for a minute, but I'm definitely ready to say, like, Liam Cohen's one of those guys. Elevate a young talent, like you mentioned with Jalen McMillan. Obviously the year that Bucky Irving has had, they transformed the run game. They've even cut back the volatility in Baker's game. By the way, Baker.
Yeah.
Baker's second in the NFL in passing yards behind Joe Burrow. I mean, he has 39 touchdowns. He's the most touchdown passes over the last 2 years among all quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield. And that's kind of thing here, Andy, is that you already struck gold once, like letting your really good offensive coordinator, Dave Canales, just goodbye. See, I mean, you know, he got a head coaching job. There's nothing you can do about that. But like, man, you got to try to get Liam Cohen on the Ben Johnson plan. You got to maybe think about like, hey, Todd Bowles, do you want to go? You want to go hang out with Bruce Arians in the front office playing golf for 300 days out of the year? You want to get paid to play golf? Golf is fun. Don't you like golf? Like, what do you got to do? I don't know what they got to do. They got to do something. Can't let him out of the building.
You know, it's fun. It's funny to mention Baker Mayfield next to Joe Burrow, because the Bucs are just exactly the Bengals of the NFC right now. You know, where like, they could be such a chaos agent if, like, again, they have to get into the playoffs, but if they get there, they could beat any team. There's not a team in the NFC that the Bucs couldn't beat on the right day, under the right circumstances. And I feel the same way about the Bengals in the AFC. That seems a little bit more daunting, but these are teams that on their best day will absolutely put 35 points up against you.
Yeah, and their worst games, they'll lose to a guy that got benched in Atlanta. But there's that. All right, final game that we really care about. I don't even know if we really care about this one, but Jaguars 20, Titans 13. We care about it for a couple of individual player performances, Andy, which number one has to be Brian Thomas Jr., who joins a truly elite group of NFL receivers. If you look at just the stats that he's putting up as a rookie, I quote tweeted the graphic here, and I can find it in 2 seconds if you just let me sort of filibuster here, and because this is great podcasting. Yeah, so I quote tweeted the graphic. Rookies with 1,100 plus receiving yards and 10 plus touchdowns in the Super Bowl era: Randy Moss, Ja'Marr Chase, Odell Beckham Jr., Brian Thomas Jr. So hell of an ad for LSU there, by the way.
Wow. Yeah.
LSU just lapping the field in terms of wide receiver U, but that is great company for Brian Thomas. So we probably got to have a discussion about him for the 100th time, and I'd love to do it. But also, I mean, we did get some great performances from especially Tajay Spears in this game, who people might have become like a random fantasy league winner in this one.
Yeah, Tajay Spears has been feasting in recent weeks. He came away from this game with an injury, I want to say. I think it was another concussion. Yeah, don't yet know that, it's a concussion. We don't need to talk about the severity. That's really a shame. But he was running great early in the game. Everything that I saw looked great. Tajay Spears, we know, is one of the more elusive backs. It's unfortunate that he's been stuck in a position where he can't really get a full featured load. And Tony Pollard had been great prior to the injury too. But Spears, excellent. I think this is five straight games with double digit targets for Brian Thomas. And I don't want to give the team too much credit for figuring it out, because it also followed, you know, the season ending injuries to guys like Kirk and to Ingram. And it's not like
even Gabe Davis, bro. It took Gabe Davis kind of coming out of the lineup for this to happen. I don't think the Jags deserve any credit for this.
Yeah. I kind of feel that way. And I'm not inclined to give the Jaguars too much credit. Is it giving them credit to say at least they've held it together to pull out a win against a very beatable team like this? Mac Jones certainly hasn't been great, but he hasn't been a joke. He hasn't been bad. Like, this is pretty good. And he's good enough and certainly smart enough to identify like a real field tilting receiver when he has one, and he's definitely got one in Thomas. This is just a super encouraging start to his career, obviously. And I don't know, it's at this point it's pretty clear that Brian Thomas is going to be taken, I don't know, second round next year. Like, we just did a one round mock on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning, and It wouldn't be that much longer before I would say the name Brian Thomas. I mean, middle of the second round, something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. But before I do that, I just want to say the Mac Jones thing. There's a sliding scale of bad quarterbacks in the league, okay? And Mac Jones is not a good quarterback. He's not a starting quarterback, no question. But, like, we can celebrate Brian Thomas's rookie season without being like, and he's doing this with Mac Jones. Like,
yes.
We've seen way worse. Okay. We have seen way worse than Mac Thomas or Mac Jones. Excuse me. I'm all tilted about this. But Brian Thomas is also a great example of, like, this guy's gotten better over the course of his rookie season. That is clear on film. And it is also when we're talking about this guy doesn't earn targets or whatever, remember that has a lot to do with who's around them, okay? And again, that's not taking anything away from Brian Thomas Jr., who I think has a very real case to be, like you said, a second-round pick. So I was going to just ask you, stop me when I get to a name that, like, you would take Brian Thomas Jr. ahead of this guy next year. Long way to go. I get it. Whatever. Who cares? Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua. I know you took CeeDee Lamb at the end of round one, so I'll throw CeeDee Lamb in there. Nico Collins, AJ Brown, Malik Nabers. I mean,
okay, now we're having a conversation.
Okay.
Like, it's not settled, but I gotta know the quarterback situation in New York a little bit. I've been super impressed by Malik Nabers, but man, Brian Thomas is a touchdown machine, and I'm not entirely out on Trevor Lawrence either. I kind of know what I have in Trevor Lawrence, and it's enough to support a wide receiver one. So we're probably at a point with Nabers where I want to see what the quarterback looks like and who it is and whether or not it's could be really good, could be Sam Darnold, or it could be a rookie that I don't really believe in, or worst case scenario it's Kirk Cousins. I don't know who it's going to be. Jameis would be awesome. If you're giving me Malik with Jameis Winston, I'm probably taking Malik Nabers.
For 11 games, let's be clear. It's Jameis for 11 games until he gets himself benched. But those are going to be some fun 11 games. Those are going to be some real fun 11 games you're going to get there.
Awesome.
I'm having the conversation around the the CeeDee Lamb, Nico Collins, AJ Brown group right now for me. That's where I'm at with Thomas. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned the fact, like, he has a quarterback. I think Lawrence again, sliding scale of quarterbacks here. Is Trevor Lawrence Josh Allen? No. Is Trevor Lawrence enough to get your quarter to get your wide receiver one to like a top five season? I think absolutely when they're as good as Brian Thomas. Talk to me about who's calling plays and who's coaching in Jacksonville. I think that's the biggest sort of outstanding question for him. But okay, let's take our final break. When we come back, we run through the games that could have been an email, and we're going to rapid fire through these things because they are some ugly, ugly performances right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, we have five games that could have been an email this week, and there's some real email-y vibes in this one. Let's start with Eagles 41, Cowboys 7. Shout out to Kenny Pickett and Tanner McKee, who entered the game after Kenny Pickett went down with an injury and still promptly threw a touchdown pass on the Cowboys. Defense that I've been saying, like, oh, really resurgent effort. Hey, the Cowboys are playing hard. What a jackass thing to be saying about the damn Cowboys.
Yeah, they were, who was it, Andrew Booth that they were just picking on so mercilessly, that Devontae Smith got a couple times. That was almost, that almost got uncomfortable for a little while there.
Yeah.
Tanner McKee, shout out to him. 4 pass attempts, 2 touchdowns. This is like, if this is where the career stats end for Tanner McKee, and they might, that's an incredible line. Like, that's
50% touchdown rate.
Yeah, that is small sample greatest quarterback of all time right there. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way the Eagles are. Saquon Barkley goes over 2,000 yards. Shout out to him. Unbelievable season. Running back 1 overall in fantasy. Yeah, bad effort from the Cowboys offense here. Producer Colin wrote on the outline, if Dallas doesn't spend 2 of their first 3 picks on a running back and wide receiver, I will quit my fandom Harmon/Panther style. Doubt it. I'll go ahead and set the betting line at that, or like -1 billion. No chance Colin's not, you know, giving us 50 notes about a Cowboys game.
Yeah.
You know, this time next year when they're eliminated from playoff contention, or, you know, whatever, or shoot, even in September of next year before, when Colin still has hope, he's writing us a dissertation on what's going on in a Cowboys game in September. Even when they go defensive line, offensive line, and, you know, one wide receiver that will catch 2 passes in the rookie season next year in the 3rd round.
I mean, they got Jonathan Mingo. Like, that solved the wide receiver problem, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 4th round pick Jonathan
they
Mingo.
They won the Mingo sweepstakes. What are we even talking about?
Yeah, that was cute when they threw a deep pass, a go route to him, and he just was like looking over the wrong shoulder. That was that was adorable. That was great stuff. Okay,
I loved the broadcast. I'm blanking on who was the broadcaster of that game, because they were like, that was not a bad throw.
I think it was Greg Olsen. Yeah, it was Greg Olsen, because he said,
because
I think Olsen said, yeah, good rookie season with the Panthers, fell out of favor. There was like, Greg, come on, dog. That was not a good rookie season with the Panthers.
That whizzed right over his shoulder.
Yeah, not even close.
Do the Eagles play Saquon next week? You can't, right? Like, that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, I know, I mean, he's within shouting distance of the rushing record, but nah, I think they end up not playing him next week. So yeah, another anti week 18.
Yeah, he's not
there.
Within shouting distance where it's like he's only 4 carries away, right? Though he's like a full game away. Yeah.
Yes, correct. So that's why I kind of tend to doubt that he plays next week. All right, next game up here: Bills 40, Jets 14. The Jets were well on their way to a shutout before Aaron Rodgers left this game, and Tyrod Taylor promptly threw a touchdown pass to Garrett Wilson, who, if you missed the news this morning, Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network put out a report that, you know, Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, basically, like, their relationship has been tense, and Wilson's team is considering options, including a trade, if Rodgers is brought back as the starting quarterback next year. Which, I mean, if there would be no serious person that would say, like, yeah, they should choose Rodgers over Garrett Wilson if that's the debate.
Yeah, this was a disgusting game from the awful Jets overall. Rodgers had the play in which he throws the interception and then picks up the roughing penalty for the shot out of bounds on the guy who intercepted it was wild. The fact that Tyrod comes into this game and throws 2 touchdown passes, also wild, immediately hits Garrett Wilson. Just really uncomfortable. Bunch of, like, I think multiple Jets players after this game talked about the lack of effort from many of their colleagues. So that's just, this is a franchise in a really, really bad spot.
I don't know if you saw this too, but there is like a viral post going around where someone or like Sauce Gardner was commenting on a T. Higgins related post or something. And somebody was like, oh, Sauce, you got to recruit him to the Jets next year. And he said, I will not, in all capital letters, be doing that. And it dawned on me that not even 365 days ago at last year's Super Bowl, I asked Sauce Gardner, like, yo, who are some free agent receivers you want to recruit to the Jets? Because he was big into like recruiting on the internet last year. Great. That really worked out. Guess what? The only guy you're recruiting is the guy who used to play with your quarterback, because that's the guy that's playing quarterback for you, by the way. But the first name out of his mouth was T. Higgins.
Now,
less than a year later, he's like, nah, don't be coming here, man.
Man. And Rodgers still sitting on 499 career touchdown passes. So we're going to see him next week.
Yeah.
Fun, I guess.
Yeah. The thing with Rodgers is that if you can protect him and every receiver on the play is exactly where he wants them to be, then he can actually still give you above average quarterback play. The problem is that's like 8-10% of the snaps in any given NFL game. So kind of tough. Okay, let's move on here. Chargers 40, Patriots 7. Ladd McConkey is the best wide receiver on planet Earth. End of post.
Yeah, damn it. I don't even want to talk about this game. McConkey got me. I didn't even like the teams that I still had alive in the fantasy playoffs, but McConkey got both of them, and I'm over that guy.
Okay, well, I'm not over him. I'm a big fan, so that's I'm looking forward to seeing the Chargers in the postseason. Do you think
the Chargers, by the way, are one of those teams that I think they're very much in the angling to play the Texans game right now.
Yes.
I think. And if they win out and Cincinnati wins, I think that's the scenario they need. And then they get the Texans, which is the big prize in the AFC playoffs right now.
Yeah, which that would be, I think I'd give the Chargers an edge in that game, especially with what we last saw, which I know this feels like a different lifetime ago, but we did see the Texans play in this week, and it was a pretty pitiful performance. If you don't remember it, if you booze a little too hard on Christmas, yikes, go back and review the highlights for the Houston Texans. It will take you one play.
Which of their 2 points was your favorite?
Yeah, right. That'll be great. Anyways. Yeah, we saw Taylor Heineke in this game. That's all you need to know about from the Chargers side of it. Do you think we see Gerard Mayo as the head coach of the Patriots next year? Because there's a lot of kind of there's some drum beats about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise about it. If I had to guess, and the standards that Kraft has, I kind of don't think so. That feels wrong. Like you should have known bringing that guy in to coach the team. Hey, it's good. There's going to be a period of growth, and we're not ready to win just yet necessarily. But I don't know. I don't know that is the most patient ownership. And there's, I feel like the fan base doesn't necessarily want to see him. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he was gone.
Yeah, I think it almost is. It's good and bad in that Drake May looks so good right away. And I thought this was another, you know, he left this game for periods, but I thought it was another really nice Drake May performance in an objectively bad situation. You know, we can hem and haw about all these rookies and like what's the situation they're in. This is not a great like spot for Drake May to be cruising in, and they're not winning football games, but he looks verifiably functional. Yeah. But that will make this job look that much more attractive, especially if they're the ones that end up with the number one overall pick. So that almost will sort of damn Mayo in that regard. It's like, I think they could recruit a Ben Johnson to this job. You know, I think that's very possible, especially just with the allure of the Patriots and all that. But yeah, I mean, Mayo, I think there's a lot on his plate. You know, he's not only is he he's the head coach replacing Bill Belichick, he's also a first time defensive play caller. He's not been a coach that long either. And the defense stinks. Like it's an objectively terrible unit. So a lot working against him. I don't know if there's.
Oh, I was just going to say they're headed into a super weird week 18 game because they're going to play the Bills. The Bills are going to sit everybody because they're locked into the 2 seed. The Patriots that, you know, again, players on the field are going to try to win the game. The ownership, front office should probably not be trying to win this game, right? I wouldn't be surprised if they sit. I don't know what the point would be of rolling May out there next week. You'd just be risking injury. They probably sit him. I have no idea.
No idea. Yeah. And he's a guy who's gotten banged up, you know, over the course of the season. So really, truly, who knows what's going to happen in that game. And by the way, like, who's better, the Bills backups or the Patriots starters? I'm not quite sure about that.
It's a great question.
All right. Next game up here. Raiders 25, Saints 10. I have like two words to say about this game, which is Brock Bowers.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because Bowers hit a couple of incredible milestones. And this is something that we teed up a little bit on Fantasy Football Live as well. Like, it's not nothing to break a 63-year-old receiving record, right? Like, well over 1,000 yards, you know, Ditka's tight end rookie receiving record had stood for so damn long, which is, you know, an indication of just how difficult the learning curve can be at tight end. You know, what a challenge it is to be a rookie pass catcher under any circumstances. And that is, I mean, there are just not very many passing and receiving records that have survived the modern era. And that is a really notable record to knock off. And I feel like Bowers isn't going to get a lot of discussion because it's the Raiders and we're not that interested in that team. And they happen to be closing their season with some pretty uninteresting games and all that. But this has just been a, whatever you thought Brock Bowers was going to do, I think he's exceeded it. He's just been absolutely phenomenal. This was an incredible, he breaks Puka Nacua's rookie reception record, which he doesn't even totally own yet because Malik Nabers is maybe also coming for that. But we'll see where that goes. But the rookie tight end receiving record, again, like a freaking Mike Ditka record, is really something.
Yeah, he's a special player. And I could be convinced that there's something here on offense. I've liked what the Turners have done with this offense. I've talked about that a lot. I come away from this game really liking what they do on offense, and I'm fascinated to see who's calling plays there and who's playing quarterback for the Las Vegas Raiders in 2025, because they've got a guy in Bowers I think is a superstar. Myers is a good player, and they have some room to grow there as well.
I will also say that the people on social who feel the need to say that Mike Ditka did it in 14 games, like, shut up. It's a little different game now, right? Like, come on. All due respect to Mike Ditka, who I fully believe, if he were coming up today, would have also been a really good NFL player. Like, I'm not that guy, but I mean, shut up. Like, the league is so much more difficult today. And if you took Brock Bowers, like present day Brock Bowers, and transported him back to 1961, he would touch the ball on every play and gain 2,500 yards.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point. Whereas a lot of the guys that like Ditka is probably going against were, were 50 pounds lighter than the guys who are playing defense right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Enough. I mean, the NFL, like, I don't know, we don't talk about it in the NFL often enough, but like the last NFL team to integrate was Washington in 1962. So Mike Ditka, no fault of his own, but Mike Ditka was not even playing against all of the best football players in his era.
Yeah. Also, don't dunk on anyone with like something that anyone can Google. Like, congratulations. Thanks for stating a fact. All right.
Yeah.
Last one here. And this is a game that happened. Dolphins 20, Browns 3. Dorian Thompson Robinson, still no touchdown passes on the season. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the Dorian Thompson Robinson thing is, I guess that's how you tank, right? Like, you make sure that you make sure that guy is your starting quarterback, and that's how tanking happens in the NFL. And I almost feel bad for him. Like, they clearly have Jameis is hurt, but they clearly have a better opportunity to win games with somebody like Jameis Winston at quarterback. On the Miami side, I'll just say that, like, if someone would have simply introduced Tyreek Hill to Tyler Huntley earlier in the season, the year would have gone differently for a few of my fantasy teams. Like, all of a sudden we're throwing a Tyreek Hill. Cool. That's good to see.
Yeah, he spent the time away from the Dolphins. He spent time like figuring that out, like looking up some Tyreek Hill highlights on YouTube. Like, oh man, that guy's on my team. That's pretty sick. Who knew? Yeah, I got nothing else for you on this game. I mean, I kept it up on the second screen. Didn't really grab my interest while the Packers and Vikings game was on. So
no, I turned it off for the last 75 minutes. I was just watching Packers and Vikings.
It was nice to have two games on in that late window just to dial in on the one that mattered and just occasionally be like, oh, there's Jerry Jeudy getting his, I don't know, 18 targets in this game. That was that was pretty wild. I did not have an 18 target game for Jerry Jeudy on my bingo card. And they certainly break the rule of you scored 3 points and you threw to your number one receiver 18 times. Not a good thing for your offense. They broke the rule by a lot, but I think that's a great way to end it here on the recap show. Andy, appreciate you, buddy. Any final thoughts on what was I don't even know how to describe week 17, but week 17, certainly on my radar, the quality of games, the missing players and thing. And the fact that this week just took forever.
Wild week. The week's not over. I remember being so excited going into it. Like the idea that, oh man, the week is going to last from Wednesday to Monday. That's crazy. That's so exciting. And it's Wednesday feels like another lifetime. Wednesday feels like it was definitely not part of week 17. I don't know that we need to do that again.
Yeah, I think I had a longer beard and glasses and like more hair when week 18 started when week 17 started. That's kind of how I feel about that. But that is going to do it for us today, and that is going to do it for our fantasy season podcast schedule. Man, it has been a fun run this year. 5 shows a week. This was our final week of 5 shows a week because the fantasy season is over. So big shout out and thank you to Andy, to Dalton, to Sal, to Nate, and Tara for an incredible 2024 season. And a huge thank you and shout out to the viewers and listeners for being there every step of the way. Electric ride, such a blast. It has been our best, most engaged season ever, especially on YouTube. So if you're watching this right now, shout out to you. Really appreciate it. Obviously, this is not the end of the show. Give me a break. Stop podcasting? Never. So this is definitely not a goodbye in any means. We're ecstatic for a lot of content that's coming up here, including NFL playoffs. We're going to obviously have some shows in week 18. For the sickos out there who are playing week 18, we will have a little bit of week 18 content. For those people who just are along for the ride and just love football, we're going to have week 18, of course. We've got free agency. We've got the combine. We've got draft season beyond. So much coming up. So again, with that said, we will still have week 18, the NFL postseason Super Bowl to cover. We're going to help you with all that. This week, we have 3 podcasts. Starting next week, we're going to be hitting your feed every Monday and Thursday through the Super Bowl. So a lot to look forward to. In the meantime, it's going to do it for this show. On Tuesday, Dalton Del Don will be back joining me to share the 10 lessons that we learned from this fantasy season. Until then, we are out.